Chapter 2. Once transport completed docking protocols, I climbed out of my bunk, collected my knapsack. I had a few things in it, but mostly it was just so I could look more like a human traveler, and took a shortcut down the maintenance shaft to the passenger lock. The others would be going out through the cargo lock into a transport module that a cargo lifter would tow to the ship, taking them to their new home. This was billed as for their convenience, but their contractor wouldn't want them to walk through the station where they might change their minds and escape. I didn't want to say goodbye. I couldn't save this many humans from where they were going, where they thought they wanted to go, but I didn't have to watch it either. I did say goodbye to transport, which let me out of the lock and then deleted the record from its log. I could tell it was sad to see me go, but this wasn't a trip I'd be anxious to repeat. I had practice at hacking different hub and ring security now, so it was much less nerve-wracking to get past the weapon scans. SEC units are designed to be mobile components of SEC systems, every kind of SEC system, so the company can rent us to as many different clients as possible, even those with proprietary equipment. The trick to hacking a SEC system is making it think you're supposed to be there, and the company had helpfully provided us with all the code necessary for that. Practice and terrifying necessity had made me good at altering it on the fly. I did stop in the Ring Mall, an automated kiosk that sold feed interfaces for non-augmented humans, portable display surfaces, and memory clips. The clips were for extra data storage, and were each about the size of a fingertip. They were used by humans who had to set up new systems or travel to places that didn't have the feed, or who wanted to store data somewhere that wasn't feed accessible. Though company SEC systems had ways of reading them, clients sometimes tried to hide proprietary data on them. I bought a set of clips with my hard currency card. I saw it still had plenty of money left on it. Tapan and the others must have paid me a lot. The private docks were never as busy as the public ones, with just a few humans heading in or out, and lots of hauler bots moving cargo. I scanned for drones as I crossed the embarkation floor, but there were only two there to monitor hauler bot activity. I found the supply ship's lock and pinged it to see if anyone was home. The bot pilot pinged back. It was a lower-level bot, not high-functioning enough to be bored while in dock, or interested in the prospect of something to do. Like the transport bots I'd run into, Art was the exception. It communicated in images. Yes, it was a supply ship. Yes, it was going to Milu. It went to Milu on a 47-cycle schedule. An update had come from transit control that it was to hold its departure, but it expected clearance sometime in the next two cycles. It was like talking to a recorded traveler's information ad. But I figured I'd gotten lucky for once. I made it think I had Port Authority authorization and asked it to let me board, and it did. Then I gently excised my entrance from its memory. As far as it was concerned, I had always been on board. I didn't like to do it. I liked to negotiate with bot pilots. But this one was so limited, I was afraid it was incapable of making a deal and sticking to it. I didn't want to risk it telling the Port Authority about me because it didn't understand why that was a bad idea. I went down a short corridor into the main compartment and found the passage into the cargo and supply storage. It was small, just big enough for a console used to attach and remove the two cargo modules and the lockers for onboard supplies. Both modules were already attached, so if the ship were waiting for cargo, one would have to be detached and reloaded. With the configuration of the crew area, that shouldn't affect me, though. I used the time to search around, mostly because I was a little edgy and it still programmed habit to patrol. Ships' repair drones followed me, attracted by a moving body where there wasn't supposed to be one, but without direction from ship, they didn't bother me. There were no private cabins, just a couple of bunks built against the bulkheads up on the control deck next to the pilot suite, and two more in cubbies behind the cargo station, next to the emergency med system and a tiny restroom cubby. I didn't need it, and it would be a relief not to have to pretend to use it often enough to look human. Though I was getting used to having access to a human shower. Compared to a company security ready room, the accommodations were lavish. I settled on one of the bunks on the control deck and started sorting my new media. Okay, I should have realized that the packs of bedding and other supplies in one of the lockers were probably there for a reason. After trying and rejecting a few newly downloaded shows, I started on a first episode that looked promising. It took place in an alt-world with magic and improbable talking weapons. Improbable because I was a talking weapon and I knew how people felt about me. Some 20 or so hours later, I was still deep in the show and enjoying my human-free vacation. Fortunately, when the life support cycled on, I felt the air pressure increase. I don't need much air, and can always go into hibernation mode if I run out, so the minimal atmosphere on automated transports is fine for me. I paused the show and sat up. I queried the bot pilot and asked if anyone was coming aboard. Yes, the two passengers were coming aboard, and it had received an update from Transit Authority that it was now cleared to file for a departure time. Another one of those oh shit moments. I'd searched the ship already, at least, so I had a couple of likely spots in mind. I rolled off the bunk, remembered to grab my bag, dropped down the vertical passage to the main compartment. I crossed the compartment and went down the passage to the cargo area. I picked the locker that was the least accessible and shifted the contents around until I could squeeze myself into the back, the supply pack screening me from view. I cozied up to the bot pilot and reminded it I was supposed to be here, and there was no need to mention me to anybody else, including its passengers and the port authority. It didn't have any security cameras. Transports not controlled by corporate political entities rarely do. But it did have the drones. With their scanners, I had a good view of all the interior compartments, once I filtered out the maintenance data I didn't need. 16 minutes later, the lock cycled and two passengers came aboard. Two augmented humans carrying traveling packs and a couple of cases I recognized immediately. Combat gear, including armor and weapons. Huh. Bots were more common for combat than humans, for the same reason sec units were more common for security contracts. If we don't follow orders, we get our brains fried. But there were joint corporate and other political entity treaties about the use of combat bots, though everybody seemed to find ways around that. It was a pretty common plot on some of the serials from outside the corporation rim. I listened in with the drones and ship's feed, but the two humans didn't talk much, just stowing their gear with occasional remarks to each other. From their feed signatures, I knew their names were Wilkin and Girth. It was too much to expect that they would chat about why they were going to Milu, but there were ways. As a sec unit, a large part of my function was helping the company record everything my clients did and said so the company could data mine it and sell anything worthwhile. They say good security comes at a price, and the company takes that literally. Most of the recordings are just junk that gets deleted. But it has to be analyzed first and the good bits pulled out. Normally this is done in conjunction with a sec system, but I can do it alone, and I still have all the code for it. It was taking up space in my storage that could have been used for media, but it was also something I couldn't replace on the fly. While the two humans pulled some supply packs from the locker I wasn't in and got settled, I adjusted the drone's code to let them record. Once I collected enough data, I could start the analysis in background. As ship disengaged from the lock and started its trip to Milu, I was already watching my new show again. It took 20 cycles by ship's local time to get to Milu. I hadn't expected it to bother me. I've been in transport boxes and cubicles for much longer, and a lot of those trips were before I hacked my governor module and started downloading media. But I wasn't used to traveling as cargo anymore, even with new shows, serials, and several hundred books to go through. The transient rest tube hadn't bothered me, and I had spent three other transport trips, including the one with Art, mostly without moving. I wasn't sure what the difference was. Okay, maybe I was sure. In all the other spaces, I'd had the ability to move whenever I wanted. Whatever, it was a relief when ship reported that it was on approach to Milu. 2 minutes later, I realized I was picking up the station feed, but there was nothing on it. Usually there's traffic and docking information, potential navigation hazards, travelers' news, that kind of thing. But here, there was nothing. I checked with ship, who reported that there was no other traffic on approach, but this matched with its previous experiences docking at this station. I had watched a serial once that featured a dead, haunted station, and okay, that was unlikely, but it's better to make sure. The silence was still weirdly unnerving. The station was triangle-shaped and smaller than Ravi Hyrule. The scan showed two ships in dock and a scatter of shuttles, a fraction of its capacity. Ship had moved into docking position before I finally heard anything on the feed. The welcome message sounded normal enough, but the station index looked like the info system had glitched. There was a list of businesses and services, but each entry had been updated with a closed, inactive notice. So the place might not be haunted, but it was teetering on the edge of dead, inactive status. While I waited for ship to finish docking, I checked the results of my analysis. Wilkin and Girth were security consultants, hired by a fact-finding research group contracted by Goodnight Lander Independent. GI had filed the abandonment markers on Graycrist's deserted terraforming facility and set up the tractor array to protect it from disintegration, and now they were starting the process to take formal possession. The research group's job was to go into the facility and to make a report on its status. This was exactly the kind of contract that bond companies supply SEC units for. The kind of contract I had done more times than I still had in my memory. But from Wilkin and Girth's conversations over the past 20 cycles, it was clear there was no bond company, no SEC units. I tried not to take it personally. If a bond company with SEC unit security had been involved, I would have had to abort this, whatever it was I was doing. The change in my configuration would fool scans, but not another SEC unit. And any unit that detected me would report it to their hub system immediately. I sure as hell would have reported me. Rogue SEC units are fucking dangerous. Trust me on that. While I was waiting for ship to finish its docking procedure, I figured the clanking of the docking process would mask any noise from small movements. I pulled my knapsack around, opened the skin of my right arm where it met the edge of my energy weapon, and inserted all the memory clips I'd bought into the space. They felt weird and bulky, but I'd get used to it. I was going to leave my knapsack here in the locker. We docked, and Wilkin and Girth gathered their gear and went out the airlock into the station. As I unpacked myself from the locker, I used the station's public feed to hack its security system. Most of the cameras weren't active, and the scans were checking exclusively for environmental safety and damage detection. They were more worried about their equipment failing than people attempting theft or sabotage, but maybe that was because there weren't that many people. Once I'd repacked the locker and made sure I hadn't left any traces of my presence, I poked around a little to see if the humans had left anything behind. No luck. I hesitated, considering ship's drones. With not many cameras to rely on, drones would be nice. But the repair drones were much larger than the ones I was used to working with, mostly to accommodate the little arms and hands they needed for maintenance. I decided depriving ship of any of them wasn't worth it. I did make a few other adjustments. I had ship note itself in the port's schedule as under maintenance and made it think it needed my authorization to leave. Since ship took care of itself, and the company that owned it didn't even have so much as a kiosk in this system, I didn't think anybody would bother to check on it as long as it didn't outstay its schedule by more than a few cycles. With so few ships in dock, I didn't want to get stuck here. When I cycled through ship's lock, the embarkation area was empty. A lack of adequate lighting created lots of shadows, which didn't disguise the scuff marks and stains on the big floor panels. A lone food wrapper drifted along in the breeze from the air recirc, like they weren't even running the cleaners anymore. There were no drones, no hauler bots. There were two big bot-piloted lifters outside now, removing ship's cargo modules for transfer, and I was glad to be able to hear them banging around out there and sending each other data over the station's mostly silent feed. I don't like having to navigate halls crowded with humans staring at me and making eye contact, but the opposite was oddly just as creepy. I found Girth and Wilkin on one of the few working security cameras and started after them. They were heading down the embarkation hall, not up to the habitation levels. There was no tourist map info in the feed, but hacking the cameras gave me access to the station's maintenance system, and I pulled a schematic from there. All the areas, except for what was essential for minimum station operation, were shut down. I wondered if Goodnight Lander Independence petition for reclamation from abandonment was popular up here on the transit station. I already didn't like this place much, and I didn't have to live here. I have code for freezing cameras and deleting myself from them that I've used under much more difficult circumstances, and I altered it to work with the station's proprietary security system. Though, really, the biggest danger was a human spotting me from down the terminal and thinking, "Hey, who's that?" Fortunately, the station was mostly dark. I trailed Wilkin and Girth to the end of the embarkation hall and up the ramp toward what the schematic said was the Port Authority cargo control offices. As I passed the lock junction at the top of the ramp, something bright and colorful popped up right in front of me and I nearly screamed. It was an ad for a cargo service, created by marker paint on the floor that reacted to movement. It threw a little video into the feed, too, just in case you somehow missed the glowing thing in your face. Usually, these markers are used only for emergency procedures because they work, even if the power is down. I had never seen them used for ads before. The whole point of markers was that they were the only thing visible in a power outage, so it would be easy to see them. It was hard enough trying to get stupid humans to follow the markers to safety without ads popping up, obscuring the emergency route. I reminded myself it wasn't my job to get humans to safety anymore. I still hated the marker ads. I checked the cameras again and saw Wilkin and Girth had found signs of life in the Port Authority area. They stood outside an office center with three levels of bubble windows looking out over what should be the station mall. It was an open plaza area with a couple of tube transports arcing overhead, and a big globular display that was currently on standby, hovering in the air. It was surrounded by multi-levels of dark, shadowy occupation blocks and empty fronts for places that should be cafes, hotels, cargo brokers, transit offices, tech shops, and so on. Much of it looked unfinished, like no one had ever moved in, and the rest had closed, nothing left behind but a few stray, floating display surfaces. I turned into a corridor that would have led away from the Port Authority District into the main habitation block, if there had been one. I walked in the near darkness until I found an empty cubby prepared for something that had never been installed, and crouched down inside it. I could monitor the cameras now without worrying about any random station personnel spotting me. A maintenance weapon scanner drone brushed my feed, and I grabbed it and got control. It was on a desultory patrol outside the PA offices, and I used it to give me better views and audio than the static security camera. Wilkin and Girth were talking to two new humans. There was also a human form bot standing nearby. I hadn't seen one in a while in person, just on the entertainment feed. They aren't popular in corporation territory, because there's not a lot of things they can do that task-specific bots can't do better. And with the feed available, their data storage and processing ability isn't that exciting. Unlike constructs, they don't have any cloned human tissue, so they're just a bare metal bot body that can pick up heavy things. Except not as well as a hauler bot or any other kind of cargo lifter. In some entertainment media I had seen, they were used to portray the evil rogue sec units who menaced the main characters. Not that I was annoyed by that or anything. It was actually good, because then humans who had never worked with sec units expected us to look like human form bots, and not what we actually looked like. I wasn't annoyed at all, not one bit. I had to run back the drone's camera feed to catch up. I had been so busy conquering that burst of non-annoyance. The first new human said, "I'm Don Abena." She gestured to the other new human. "This is my colleague Hirune and our assistant Mickey." She hesitated. "Did the employment agent have time to brief you?" "They said it was a bodyguard job." Wilkin flicked a glance at the bot, which was apparently called Mickey. It stood there with its head cocked, staring at her with big globe-like eyes. It was unusual for a human to introduce a bot, and that's putting it mildly. Girth looked like she was struggling to keep her expression professionally blank. Wilkin continued, "You're going down to the terraforming facility to make an initial assessment, and your contract with Goodnight Lander Independent requires a security team." Abena nodded. "I'm hoping we won't actually need you. But the company that abandoned the facility didn't maintain the satellite monitoring, and no one has been inside since they left. We assume it's deserted, but there's no way to make sure."
"The agent said that was a potential problem," Girth said. "The terraforming shield is preventing any off-site scanning?"
Hirune answered, "Yes, we know it's stable because of the tractor array GI put into place, but that's all. The station's been monitoring the facility, but as you can see, there are no patrol vessels here." She meant there was a possibility that raiders had moved into the facility. Except, if they did that, they couldn't have been very good raiders because they had ignored the station. Also, raiders tend to hit and run, and not hang around to live on a deteriorating terraforming facility. Actually, with my experience in security, anybody who wanted to hang around and live on a deteriorating terraforming facility worried me a lot more than raiders. Girth and Wilkin exchanged a look. Maybe the same thought had occurred to them. Wilkin asked,
"Is there a possibility there were active organisms in the facility when it was abandoned?"
"The biological matrices would have been sealed and probably destroyed before the staff left," Hirune said. She made a gesture, like flicking something away.
"Even if they hadn't, there's very little chance that they could create any dangerous airborne contamination."
Wilkin's expression remained professionally cool, but she persisted.
"I meant something other than bacteria. Any organisms large enough to be a physical danger?"
"Right. So even I knew more about terraforming than these two." Hirune's face now had the blank, lip-biting expression I associated with humans trying not to show their feelings, especially the feeling that someone had said something unintentionally hilarious. This is why it had been a struggle for me to give up armor. Concealing facial expressions was hard, even for humans. Don Abena's eyes crinkled, but she made it seem more like she and Wilkin were sharing a joke.
The Matrix wouldn't be working with any organisms larger than bacteria, and there wouldn't really be any reason to bring any larger organisms up from the surface to the facility. Of course, we don't know that they didn't, so it's proper to exercise caution.
Wilkin seemed to accept that, or at least didn't ask any more questions. It sort of made sense. It was a security consultant's job to be skeptical of their clients' assurances that everything was fine. SecUnit clients, at least, only assured each other that everything was fine while you stared at the wall and waited for everything to go horribly wrong. Abena and Hirune walked the security consultants into the Port Authority now, where they had quarters with the Skeleton Station team. They were talking about a full briefing, team prep, and a departure time 16 hours from now. Mickey, the human form bot, followed, then stopped. It turned and looked up at the drone I was riding. Its head cocked, and I could tell it was focusing in on the camera. I let the drone go, its memory of the temporary takeover blanked. It sent a confused reorientation request to the PA's system, then wandered off back to its patrol route. Mickey didn't move, still staring into the dark with the opaque surface of its eyes. The feed was clear. It couldn't know I was here. Then Mickey sent a directionless ping. Just a call into the dark, checking to see if there was anyone out there who wanted to reply. I checked myself for signal leakage, tightened my walls, and reminded myself to be careful. Just because the station feed was silent didn't mean no one was listening. The GI expedition would be running their feed off the system's equipment they brought with them, but someone on the station staff was giving the lifter bots orders and maybe still checking the security reports. This place was so quiet. Maybe Mickey had picked up the marker ad I'd tripped. Maybe it had heard a whisper in the otherwise empty feed, and that was creepy enough it even bothered me. Finally, it turned and followed its owner into the PA complex. I slipped out of the cubby and went down the dark hall to find a better hiding place. I worked my way around through the maintenance passages and loading corridors into an empty commercial slot not far from the Port Authority. After some careful work, I managed to get a view from the two security cameras inside the PA offices. Yes, two. It was weird to be around humans who didn't monitor everything everybody did constantly, via SEC or hub systems or drones, and who relied on human supervisors. And one camera was in the central hub for the port traffic control, and the other in a jury-rigged hub that was now acting as station control. The two places where, if something went wrong, you needed to know right away. In other words, not the mess, restrooms, or private quarters. It was almost like nobody here cared what anybody said or did, as long as they weren't trying to blow up the station or crash the lifter bots. After thousands of hours spent analyzing and deleting video of humans eating, having sex, performing hygiene, and eliminating excess bodily fluids, it was a relief. But still. Fortunately, the GI expedition and the station staff seemed to be pretty casual with each other, and I was able to catch enough conversation to hear that the first assessment would be a short one. Just 12 hours on the facility for an initial estimate of its condition. Then they would return to the station to analyze their findings, take a rest period, then head back. That sounded perfect. 12 hours should be plenty of time for me to find what I needed. I also heard what docking slot their ship was leaving from and when they were loading supplies aboard. I still needed help getting onto the expedition ship, but with none to few active systems to work through, I didn't have much choice. I was going to have to make friends with the stupid pet robot. "Hi, Mickey." It answered immediately.
"Hi, who are you?"
I was using the address in the ping Mickey had sent to establish a secure connection. Abena and the others had finished their prep and were taking a rest period before leaving for the terraforming facility. It gave me about 3 hours to seduce the robot. I didn't expect it to take that long. I said, "I'm a security consultant. Goodnight Lander Independent contracted with my security company to make sure your team completes their mission safely." It tried to message Abena over the feed, and I blocked it. "You can't tell anyone I'm here." I expected it to ask me how I had managed to take over its feed, how I had gotten onto the station. I thought I'd managed to anticipate most of the questions and had my answers ready. It said,
"But why not? I tell Donna Baina everything. She's my friend."
When I'd called it a pet robot, I honestly thought I was exaggerating. This was going to be even more annoying than I had anticipated. And I had anticipated a pretty high level of annoyance, maybe as high as 85%. Now I was looking at 90%, possibly 95%. I managed to keep my reaction out of the feed. It wasn't easy. I said, "This has to be a secret to keep Don Abena and the others safe. We can't risk anyone finding out about it."
"Okay," it said. I wasn't sure if it was serious. It couldn't be this easy. Maybe it was just going along until it had a chance to report me. But it said, "Promise me Don Abena and all my friends will be safe." I had the horrible feeling it was serious. I hadn't expected a bot on Art's level, but holy shit. Had the humans actually coded it to be childlike or pet-like, I guess? Or had its code developed that way on its own, responding to the way they treated it? I hesitated because while I would rather not see a group of humans killed again, I wasn't their sec unit, or even their pretend augmented human security consultant. It's hard to keep humans safe when you can't let them see you. But it was waiting, and I wanted it to trust me, and I said, "I promise." "Okay, what's your name?"
This caught me off guard. Bots don't have names. Sec units don't have names. I'd given myself a name, but it was private. I used the name I'd given Ayers and the others, my poor dumb humans who had sold themselves to a company and by now probably understood just how bad a deal it was. Rin, security consultant Rin.
"That's not your real name."
I could tell through the feed it was genuinely confused.
"It doesn't sound like you."
Obviously, Mickey was getting more through the feed than I had assumed. That was all I needed. I had nothing prepared for this, and there sure as hell wasn't anything in my buffer that was remotely helpful. I defaulted to honesty, I know, I was surprised too, and said, "Rin is what I want to be called. I don't tell anyone my real name."
"Okay. I understand, Rin. I won't tell anyone that you're here. I will be your friend and help Donna, Benna, and our team."
"Right." I almost said, "Okay." I couldn't tell if that was a default answer or Mickey was making me a solemn promise. Whatever. Either it told the humans about me or it didn't, and if I was going to do this, I had to assume it wouldn't. "Can you give me system access to your shuttle? I want to make sure it's safe."
"Okay."
And the data came through the feed. What they were calling a shuttle was actually a local space exploration transit vehicle. with two levels of crew habitation areas, plus a cargo hold that had been converted to bio-lab space. It didn't have the drive to get through the wormhole, but it could go any place else around the system. No bot pilot, just the kind of minimal automatic pilot system that I was more used to seeing on atmospheric craft. Not that helpful if everyone capable of operating the ship's higher-level functions were injured or incapacitated. On the other hand, you couldn't deliver killware if there was no bot pilot to kill. The shuttle had no independent sec system, either. I had seen on some media from outside the corporation rim that internal security was less of an issue there, that the focus was on potential external threats more than it was on policing your own people. I hadn't thought it was true, but it did mesh in with the lack of interest in monitoring the station staff in their private quarters. Also with the way my Preservation Aux clients had behaved. It made me wonder what preservation might be like, but I squelched that thought. It was probably a boring place where everybody would stare at sec units, just like everywhere else. Mickey was giving me full access, so I took a little tour via its memory of previous trips. It was a nice shuttle, way nicer than anything the company would have provided. Even the upholstery was clean and repaired. It was another sign of GI's commitment to their reclamation project. It would have come here in a big transport's belly cargo module, or in tow via a dedicated supply hauler like ship. I would need to ride Mickey's internal feed the way Art had ridden mine, although, unlike Art, I couldn't do it over the distance between a station and a planet. The good part was that there were plenty of places to hide on board the shuttle, even without packing myself in a cabinet. The bad part was that I would have no systems to see through. No eyes and ears, except for Mickey. Yeah, I was thrilled. Mickey, I'm going to need to use your systems to monitor your, I almost said, clients. It took almost a full second for me to be able to use the word Mickey wanted to hear. Your friends. I need you to be my camera and let me use your scanning ability. Sometimes I might need to speak through you, pretending to be you, to warn Don Abena and your friends about things I believe are dangerous. Can you let me do that? Obviously, with the access Mickey had given me already, I could have taken Mickey over, done what I wanted, and excised it all from its memory. I had done it to Ship, but Ship was a low-level bot and didn't have enough self-awareness to give a shit. Doing that to Mickey? But I didn't know what I would do if it said no. Mickey said, "Okay, I will do that, Consultant Wren. That sounds scary, but I want to make sure no one hurts my friends." This felt way too easy. I almost suspected a trap, or Mickey. "Have you been directed to reply to every query with a yes?" "No, Consultant Wren," Mickey said, and added, "Amusement sigil 376 equals smile." Or Mickey was a bot who had never been abused, or lied to, or treated with anything but indulgent kindness. It really thought its humans were its friends, because that's how they treated it. I signaled Mickey I would be withdrawing for 1 minute. I needed to have an emotion in private.